Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this morning is Republican State Senator Tony Huang of Fairfield. He's going to be talking with us about a number of transportation issues facing Connecticut in this year's legislative session. And I know that there's plenty to talk about. And in a 24-minute show, I don't think we could get to all of it. But we'll try our best. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Morgan. It's always great to talk to you.
Always good to talk with you as well. Well, let's just start with an overview, and then we can get into the nitty-gritty as our conversation goes on. What's on your radar in the Transportation Committee with this year's legislative session, if there are a few items that are of priority to you?
I think it's a priority for all of our committee leadership. And, you know, you hear a lot about the conflict between us versus them, Democrat versus Republican. I can share with you, in regards to transportation, we are quite bipartisan and collegial, because ultimately the areas of focus are important to everyone, and there's no party label to it. And I will say, I think first and foremost, it is also the collaborative working relationship we have with the agencies, from the Department of Transportation, Department of Motor Vehicle, Airport Safety. They're all collaborative with us, and we're open channels of communications. But I think for me, the first and foremost for us as a Transportation Committee is talking about traffic safety. When you look at traffic fatalities and injury data that continues to rise, when we had in 2024 328 fatalities on our roadways, and now even into 2025 up to February 3rd, we have 27 already. It really begs the question of, these are preventable tragedies and lives that are forever altered. And for those of us that are on the road going from point A to point B, it really just raises concerns. And so we have worked really hard as a committee on multiple issues to address some of the root causes of danger on our roadways.
As far as hit-and-run accidents are concerned, it was just the other day I was looking at a story involving a hit-and-run that injured a 10-year-old boy in the town of East Haven, and they just recently made an arrest in that particular case, somebody that fled the scene. But just in general, we hear about hit-and-runs. We hear about drinking and driving. What can be done? Is it a matter of more enforcement? Is it red light cameras? What should we be doing about those particular instances when we hear about people who are not just injured in the crash, and thankfully that boy was only hurt and had minor injuries, but as you mentioned, 328 fatalities all last year?
Well, I think the first point is to look at some of the root causes of before you address any answers. You have to kind of root out what are the causes. And I think there are three major aspects of it. I think first and foremost that we have not recovered from post-COVID traffic kind of scarcity to now traffic density, congestion, and more people on the road. But there's also, in my mind, a symptom following that of recklessness and speeding. I think that is one of the big factors that we've seen. We had a recent incident in regards to road rage that in the middle of I-84, somebody stopped a car and unbeknownstly terrorized someone that was right behind them.
Right.
I think a second factor is a constant refrain that we talk about that is part of everyday life is distracted driving. We have made cars and technology that is integrated with our phones, and we almost created a continuous work environment while people are in the car, taking away attention that is necessary in very, very difficult roadway conditions. So distracted driving is unfortunately a part of our normal living, but it has been even more embedded into the car environment. And I think third is truly impairment. I mean, you're looking at alcohol, you're looking at people going through mental crises, as well as the new addition of marijuana and substances. the three factors are real major primaries in regards to injuries, fatalities, and traffic accidents. And it is a trend, despite all of our efforts. The Transportation Committee through the DOT has passed wrong-way driving correction and technology systems. We've looked to increase awareness and education with federal grants and state grants. We have looked to be able to just talk about a lot of these issues, just as we're talking about right now. But nevertheless, we are not stemming the tide of these preventable tragedies.
I'm glad that you brought up road rage, because we have been hearing about specific instances of people who display a gun or try to get into a fight on a road. That I-84 Southbury incident was a real anomaly, in which the suspect stopped the vehicle on the highway, as you indicated, and got out and kicked and otherwise terrorized the victim in their vehicle. But what would your message be to anybody who might be feeling that road rage and they're considering carrying out some kind of an action on another person on our roads, whether they're state, local, or highways? But also, what would you tell to somebody who's a victim that doesn't really understand, going back to that Southbury case, the victim who spoke with news outlets was confused as to why it happened. What would your message be to both sides of these kinds of stories?
Well, the congestion, the rudeness on our roadways, the recklessness that it is engendered, as I mentioned earlier, are all feeding into that kind of an emotional role. And if somebody's having a bad day or going through a challenging emotional and mental health crisis, then that exasperates when they're in a moment of intensity and frustration. So I think one of the ways is for those individuals that are experiencing emotions and maybe having a crisis moment, don't get on the road. And just be very, very conscientious that it may be a even more accelerating environment that kind of pushes you over the top. And the second point in regards to victims, the reality is nobody expects to be confronted on the road. Nobody expects to be threatened on the roadways. It's beyond an intimidation, but it's also something that people need to recognize that we live in a world of minute by minute, and that when something staggers us and delays us with a traffic density that's going to take a half hour or a delay, we build up the anxiety of getting from point A to point B at a specific time. I think one of the ways that was given to me as an advice in my many days of long drives up to Hartford from Fairfield County is give yourself more time. Give yourself a better plan to anticipate that if you need to be there at 10, try to anticipate giving yourself a half-hour buffer for a meeting that you can't miss.
I'd like to change gears a little bit here in our conversation, but keeping kind of in the same vein and going back to that topic of traffic safety, whether it's on roads or highways. Is there any one area in particular that you think needs more attention? For example, we've heard cases about West Hartford where pedestrians have been hit and injured or killed. And the same for other cities like Waterbury or New Haven. But at the same time, we have concerns on our highways as well. Is there any particular area that you think needs more priority? Is it the state roads and highways, or is it the more local city roads and towns?
Well, one of the bipartisan efforts, bills that we passed out was a moniker of a Vision Zero system of traffic incidents and fatality reduction to zero incidents and zero fatalities. And it was a comprehensive working group that continues today to look at our roadway designs, from sidewalks to accommodations and speed control. And that led to the initiation of allowing local municipalities to adopt their own speed zones in communities that is significantly lower than what is the state standard, and to be able to put in speed and red light cameras at the discretion of the local municipalities. But we're also looking at empowering and funding sidewalks and master plans of Vision Zero, so that we create opportunities for pedestrians, for bikers, and cars to all coexist. I think another area that is of importance is enforcement. We have a lot of laws on our books, but we don't have enough law enforcement on our roadways. I saw a tangible difference, Morgan, when it was about 6-8 months ago, the governor issued a press release standing out on our highways and said, during this period, we are going to increase through federal and state grants a higher visibility of enforcement out on our roadways, and that we're going to really clamp down and have more enforcement out there. And I will share with you, as I was driving up from Fairfield County, when I saw a red state police car in the side of the road in clear appearance, I was amazed at how all the cars slowed down and complied with all the rules and paid a little extra attention. So again, we're going to propose a number of bills this legislative session, but I will offer this. We have laws in our books right now that we don't have enough law enforcement officials to enforce. So perhaps when you cite a sense of urgency, I would say, let us hire more state troopers. Let us make sure that we have sufficient law enforcement out there to protect and enforce the laws that we have.
Here's an interesting question that I just thought up, and I don't have any information or data behind this other than experience. When you see those red cruisers, as you mentioned, they get people's attention. Do we need, is it a change of color? You know, there's usually the gray standard state police cruiser, or black maybe, but is it these red vehicles? I think I've seen blue before. Do you think that those might be attention getters?
Absolutely. I think the increased enforcement and visibility and through the use of many of our navigation systems, there are warnings of law enforcement. One of the things we talked about, Morgan, in regards to red light and speed cameras, we're not looking to catch people. We're looking to tell people with multiple signages that are a significant distance and repeated messaging to say, we're recording, this is a speed zone, don't speed, and don't run red lights because we're going to catch you. Our goal is to encourage people to follow the law and not worry about getting caught. So an increased visibility, an increased awareness is countering the human behavior that if no one's watching me, I can just go a little bit quicker. Or if I'm trying to run to an appointment that I'm late already, that I have this urgency that I got to get there.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. This is Face Connecticut. For those of you just joining us, I'm having a conversation this morning with Republican State Senator Toti Hoang of Fairfield, discussing a number of transportation issues and priorities this year at the state capitol in the ongoing legislative session. You had just mentioned Governor Lamont, and I'd like to draw upon something that he talked about a little vaguely, but he did bring it up not too long ago concerning the current Trump administration and whether or not it may be targeting Connecticut through cuts based on DEI and things of that nature. If there were to be federal cuts to Connecticut's roadways and road projects, which we have seen since the Biden administration, an influx of federal money to go toward our infrastructure projects and upgrades, what would that mean for Connecticut? Do we have funding to continue road pavements and the projects that we have going on currently?
Well, you know what, Morgan? You just turned my hair a couple of shades gray. It is one of the biggest worries that we have in Connecticut in regards to the dramatic and impactful decisions and funding that comes from the new administration and its agencies, and it causes many sleepless nights for me in regards to what we as legislators must do with the challenges we have in the state of Connecticut. That being said, I'm confident and appreciative of the capability and leadership of Commissioner Yucalito, of the DOT, and our infrastructure czar, former Mayor Mark Boughton, who is the Commissioner of Revenue Services, that is managing the infrastructure funding for the state of Connecticut. We're working hard. We got smart people on it. Many of the requests for proposals were sent out before the new administration change. So we are managing very carefully, and I'll leave it again as and complimenting as a Connecticut Republican, I'm appreciative of the relationship and the handling of the dynamic of Governor Lamont with the new administration, that he will stand firm in protecting Connecticut, but at the same time recognizing that we need to work with the new administration to be able to make sure that Connecticut gets its fair share of funding, particularly when it comes to infrastructure, which we sorely need in transportation, that is not only in our roadways, our bridges, but also our rail systems. These are all critical elements that is a much-needed collaboration and funding supplement from the federal government. We can't deny that it's going to be a challenging dynamic, but I'm encouraged that the leaders that I've cited, and I hope to be one of them that offers a collaborative but also a strong basis of why the rationale to fund these programs are critical for Washington to Connecticut, because it's not just about Connecticut, because the corridor in which Connecticut resides in is one of the major economic bedfellows and foundation of the entire Northeast region, if not the country. So the funding to Connecticut will benefit everyone, not just Connecticut. And that's a message I hope to repeat often for those that look at funding Connecticut as an essential part of economic vitality, but also protection and safety of our roadways, railways, and bridges for people throughout this Northeast.
At what time do you and your team expect to start considering numbers as far as the budget is concerned? Because you have until early June to finalize that per the session adjournment date. So my question to you is, are you guys starting to think about the numbers that you'd be putting toward transportation currently, or are you still trying to work through kind of the language of bills and the strategy that you're going to take, because it's still early on in the session?
It is early, but we've been working really hard. I think the bicameral body, House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans, we are all feeding off of the governor's early February proposal, which offers the special transportation funding for infrastructure and transportation, but also the fiscal guardrail that needs to govern how we prioritize and spend and appropriate money. So we have been working really hard, and there is a concern in regards to the special transportation funding and how much the federal funding, but also how much we fit under the fiscal guardrail cap to meet the unique challenges we have. But I think there's another factor in regards beyond the funding. We need to be able to expedite getting projects done, because the reality is the money's not going to be there forever, and there is a sense of urgency in our roadways to make sure that people are safe, but also effectively go from point A to point B to do their work, to enjoy their quality of life, but also to just daily living in an effective and sufficient manner. But it's also an economic challenge as well. If businesses can't deliver and receive goods and services, and they can't get employees from point A to point B effectively, it's going to hurt us economically as well.
It's no secret, Senator Wong, my guest this morning on Face Connecticut, as we talk about transportation issues, that winter can really take a toll on roads of all kinds, whether it's a local back road in a eastern Connecticut town or a highway in Fairfield County. Winter can take a toll on roads. And the last few winters have been really mild. This year, however, we've had a lot of smaller snowstorms, which means that we've been out plowing the roads on kind of a regular basis. We've also been treating the roads with salt and things like that. And it has led to a lot of people concerned about potholes all over the place. Is there enough money in the budget to go out accordingly and patch these potholes now and in the spring, but also repave where necessary? Because some of these roads that didn't necessarily seem like they need paved 6 months ago, they're kind of looking like they may now.
Well, before I begin about the potholes, let me take a moment to thank our state DOT workers and many of our municipal DPW workers that have been so effective in plowing the snow and clearing our roadways. We've not had major problems, and I complimented Commissioner Yucalito in saying, you've done a great job, and extend my appreciation to the hardworking crews because you've not heard complaints. Well, I'm going to compliment you. So let me take a moment to thank all of those hardworking employees out there that make our roads and clearing the snow safely. But the erosion is going to happen. I've gone through a couple of potholes. Tires can be damaged. But it's got to be a collaborative effort between municipalities as well our state work to get things done. But that's budgeting, right? And we are, all of our municipalities, as well as the state budget considerations, are now going through a reevaluation and no longer having federal COVID ARPA money to supplement a lot of our budgetary priorities. And now we must begin anew. And make no mistake about it, filling potholes require raw material, oil, and necessary materials, which now are continually rising in cost. So it you know, fixing the roads has to be critical. Believe me, if you're a municipal leader, you're going to hear from your constituents if a pothole is breaking up tires. But nevertheless, it comes with resources, and unfortunately, with inflationary pressure and material costs, gets more and more expensive for our municipalities. It's a constant challenge for many of our communities. And you're right, we haven't had snow in a while, but you know what? It's beautiful to look at, but it's tough to maintain our roads through it.
Definitely, definitely. Well, look, we're just about out of time here. Is there anything else? Time just flies by talking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
Morgan, I always appreciate being on with you. I think one of the areas we don't hear a lot about is with climate change and our goals in reducing greenhouse carbon emissions, is that I think the state of Connecticut needs to renew and I believe redouble our commitment to mass transit, meaning buses and rails. We've done a better job in regards to maintaining rail lines, particularly Shoreline East, but we also need to increase efficiency, reliability, safety, and availability of our rails. Because the bottom line, if we're looking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and car emissions and congestion and the dangers that we talked about earlier on the road, then we need to get people off the roads, out of their car, into mass transit. And we need to have a system that needs to be the envy of this country and the world. And if anybody's ever gone to Europe, their mass transit system is an essential, dependable cog in how they move from point A to point B. So I'm preaching for an increased commitment and technology investment and reliability to get people out of their cars into mass transit. So the last thing, thank you for the opportunity, is I think we need to make greater investment and improve the quality, the efficiency, and the availability of mass transit.
Senator Wong, thank you for coming on Face Connecticut this morning.
It's always a pleasure, Morgan. Thank you for having me.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.